Friday, February the 17th, 2006. Tips from the Top Floor, show number 98.
Here's another edition of Tips from the Top Floor, bringing you the best tips and tricks for your digital photography.
On today's show, it's time for another interview. I'll talk about some new statistics, a word about secrecy, and I need your help, so please don't fast forward through the news section.
And here's your host, Chris Marquardt.
Hey, take your fingers off that fast forward button. Take them off. Just this once. Don't skip forward, please. All right, welcome to Tips from the Top Floor, the podcast about all things digital photography. It's a beautiful day, wonderful weather here, the sun's out, and thank God it's Friday. Before we get into the interview, here's a few words. Number one, here's a shout out to Valentin and all the other Our Media folks for fixing the MP3 download issues. You guys rock, and this show wouldn't be where it is today without you. Thank you, guys. And here's my call for help. I need you to fill out a listener's survey. Here's what this is about. I have signed up with PodTrack. PodTrack offers a few things to podcasters that will help them get independent information, such as show download numbers and listener demographics, in order to get good advertisers for the show. And in the situation that I'm in right now, this is exactly what I need. So if you have 5 minutes left, maybe while listening to the show on your computer, I would really, really appreciate if you could go to tipsfromthetopfloor.com. There's a link to the survey. It's absolutely anonymous. No name, address, or phone numbers are being asked from you. It took me less than 5 minutes when I gave it a try. And yes, the more of you fill it out, the bigger the chance for me to get someone like Canon or Nikon to sponsor the show. And that would be kind of cool, wouldn't it? Think lenses for giveaways on the show and stuff. Ooh. Anyway, here's my call for show 100 greetings again. Send me your greeting, some fun stuff in MP3 or any other audio format. You can drop that to info@tipsfromthetopfloor.com or leave a voicemail at 206-202-3757. And just also send a plain email if you want to. If you're planning to send something, please try to get it to me by the end of Monday. And a word about secrecy. First, that mysterious MP3 in the last show by listener Rafsitar. Now that big mysterious thread in the forum. Spotted crocodile? Gaffer's tape? Pygmy goats? What are you guys up to? You are so mean. So mean. What have I done to deserve this? We have 1,500 forum members as of today. A shout out goes to John B, subscriber number 1,500. This is really cool. Thank you all for being members of a great community. Alright, enough about this. Here's part one of the interview with Tim. And today I have a listener on the show. He is also a forum member. His name is Tim. He's very active on the forum and a great asset to the whole community, and yeah, I'm happy to have you on the show. Hey Tim, how are you doing?
I'm all right, Chris. How are you? You doing good today?
Oh yes. It's a wonderful day. Weather-wise, it was more of a gray, wet day today. But the whole thing that's going on right now with me getting my new office space and everything, that's just giving me
pretty exciting. Really, you're busy then as well.
It is keeping me busy, and it's really uplifting thing, because it's something that moves forward. It's not a stagnation kind of thing, so that's really, really good.
It looks pretty big from your photograph as well. You got lots of space.
Well, it's 80 square meters, and that's in square feet around 8,500. No, 850. And it's the picture I did was a panorama, and that's might look a bit bigger than it actually is, but it's still
big enough to put in a photo studio and everything. But but we are here to talk about you. So I gave a pretty short introduction. Can you tell a bit about yourself?
Yeah, I kind of stumbled into my job as a sort of photographic advisor. I sell camera equipment, basically, for a sort of big UK store. Finished university. My degree wasn't really what I liked, and photography's got me really hooked. So here I am now, doing interviews about working in camera stores, I guess.
So what, if I may ask, what is your degree?
I did aeronautical engineering, which is a bit far-fetched from sort of photography or sales or business.
That's actually cool, aeronautic engineering. So now you sell cameras, you sell photo equipment.
Yeah, everything from, you know, your little compacts right the way through to your top-end digital SLRs and your medium format, and we print. We do all sorts of stuff in terms of pretty much anything, photographic scanners, everything.
So what's the average rating between film and digital equipment? I suppose you also sell film, right?
Yeah, we do. In actual fact, it's pretty disappointing because every day we just see sort of less and less film cameras. We've got this sort of little selection back in the back of the shop with a couple of cameras here and there. But in terms of processing and doing films, there's films still really, really going. I mean, we get a lot of sort of 35mm negative film coming in all the time. There's a lot of people still shooting slides. Anyone that's sort of a bit concerned about it, I don't know. I was working in the lab today and we did so much film stuff. It's good. It's still kicking.
Okay. But in terms of the cameras, more and more digital.
Yeah. We hardly sell any sort of film cameras really anymore. It's kids going on school trips, maybe buy the compacts, and you know, we do get the occasional people that, you know, want their 35mm SLRs, especially the staff, actually, because it's sort of, it's less inconvenient if you've got a lab on your doorstep 5 days a week.
That's right.
To go and do your printing.
What are your favorite items that you sell?
Well, I mean, personally, I really like all the sort of digital SLR stuff. It gives you so much creative freedom, and the customers seem to really love it. The people that are really into sort of taking the photographs, they really sort of enjoy the idea of being able to have that much control, because there's just so much, as you know, where you cover a lot of it. So, yeah, they can just, they're blown away by the sort of control that they're given by them. So that's quite good fun, because you end up with really happy people at the end of the day, which is quite good.
So what I wondered is, the people that nowadays buy a digital SLR, are that mostly people that previously had a digital point-and-shoot, a small one, or are that people that come from the film SLR field and want to move into the digital world?
We get a good mix of sort of both people that had maybe a film SLR and they've got a couple of lenses and they're getting a bit more serious, but yeah, a lot of people have bought these, you know, the sort of digital point and shoots, and these days, you know, you get your aperture priority or all these sort of creative features and a lot of the point and shoots, and they just get hooked. And yeah, I mean, we do get quite a broad cross section of customers wanting them, but I guess a lot of them have had a digital camera of some description before, whether it be a really cheap sort of effort that maybe has some quite basic features and they're just hooked on, you know, post-processing, or maybe they've, you know, had a film SLR and quite an expensive digital camera but really want to sort of consolidate all together and just have the one.
And I think the camera manufacturers are really doing a tremendous job in getting people hooked to buy more equipment, especially in the digital SLR world.
Yeah, it's, you should see my wage packet by the end of the month after what I've spent. I've already got everything, but you still want more. I mean, but to be fair, you can get a lot for your money these days. There's no need for a lot of people to come in and spend £2,000 on equipment. You get so much these days. It's a totally different world. Even in the last 6 months, it's changed quite a bit.
Right. So let's look back. It's February now, and Christmas is not too long
ago.
Still
recovering from that.
How is that? How is it going?
Christmas was busy. Christmas was really, really busy. I mean, it's just non-stop. I think cameras are always sort of quite high up people's sort of Christmas wish lists. And we did have some sort of quite nice cameras come out around the Christmas period. D200 was one that's we still struggle to get stock in, to be honest, of that. That was a surprisingly expensive Christmas present, but they were really popular. We sold a lot of sort of digital compacts this year as well. People getting really, really hooked on... I think people take a lot more photos than ever before, whether they're just taking quick holiday snaps or whether they're, you know, going out and doing projects.
So what was what were the big sellers?
We just after Christmas we sold a lot of the sort of Olympus series cameras, just because they're weatherproof, and the weather where I work in Bristol is just it was really good. November is ideal landscape material. Get up at, you know, a pretty reasonable time, the light's fantastic all day. So that was really great. And then January comes and everyone wants a weatherproof camera that they can take out in the rain. So they've been really popular.
Maybe I should do a show about weatherproofing your camera so they can use other ones as well.
And DIY projects with plastic bags.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way many professions do it.
Yeah, I know. We do see some novelty equipment in the shop every now and again.
Oh, really? Oh, there's one piece of equipment that I've always wondered, and maybe I shouldn't say this here because someone might pick it up and actually patent it. I was thinking about an umbrella that you can put on your camera and attach it to the hot shoe. You know, you know those small umbrellas that you can put over your head, like novelty umbrella things? Is there anything like that for a camera?
The closest you can get that I know of is that you can get studio brackets that take umbrellas. And you could sort of, I guess you could jury-rig one of them to hold an umbrella, and you could use one of those side bracket mounts. But yeah, it is a good idea. I think Lopro actually makes something that you can attach to your backpack to put a giant umbrella in. I've seen a couple of photographers walking about. I don't know if it's really for tripods, to hold a tripod on your backpack. But I think it would be quite a nice idea, really.
Looking at the things you sold, what are the things that were returned over the last 2 months, like specific brands or specific cameras that didn't work out for people?
I think, in the shop that I work at, we don't really earn commission, so we try to get the camera right first time. As a general rule, we only really get back cameras that are broken. I think a lot of people are really happy these days because you don't have to spend very much money to get a really quite decent camera. We do see really good sort of 10x8 prints done from really minimal gear. It's all about the photographer.
Right.
I can't really think of any cameras. There's a couple of people that return other bits and pieces. Tripods get returned a lot.
Oh, really?
I think people... Yeah, a lot of people... I guess they're not as into photography as people their family have maybe thought, and they've, you know, gone and bought them a tripod, and the person unwraps it at Christmas thinking,
I hope you're pointing those towards Tips from the Top Floor for them to find out about beanbags then.
In actual fact, Tips from the Top Floor gets a lot of mentions in our shop.
Oh, really?
People always wonder, you know, they spend X pounds on a new 350D or a Nikon D50, and it's their first digital SLR. And a lot of people don't want to read a book, they want something a bit more tangible. And I guess Tips from the Top Floor sort of comes out all the time because it doesn't cost them anything. They've just spent all their wages for the next year on photographic equipment. You've got a bit of on-site advertising from us.
That's
in the
pretty
shops,
cool.
I guess.
Actually, what I can do is after the show, after we did this interview, I'll get your address and I'll send you a stack of business cards, because I have a pretty nice business card for Tips from the Top Floor, so you can hand those out to customers if you want.
Yeah, that'd be really good, actually.
Yeah.
Because we do get people all the time. And the other thing is, again, the sort of company that I work for, their policy is that if you get stuck, to come in and see us. And the particular shop that I work for is full of photography students or quite accomplished photographers. So we're always looking for sort of ways of explaining to customers, you know, how to do particular techniques, and we don't really want to recommend that they go and buy a book for £30-40.
Right.
So, yeah. Tips on the Top Floor is
And I think from just looking at the how big all this digital SLR business has become over the last 2 years, I could imagine that there's a different type of customer buying those now than the usual SLR photographers.
Yeah, I think a lot of younger people are really getting into it these days. They've just got so much more to gain from it. It's instant results. It's not less work to learn photography, but it's perhaps a little bit sort of easier to get some feedback. You know, we've got all these websites where you can submit your pictures and get a critique, or you know, get some constructive criticism. So yeah, we do get a lot of younger people that are really, really into it, whereas I guess before it was very much the sort of middle-aged man that was a photographer, and now we get everyone doing it, men or women, boys, children even, in fact, adults, teenagers, everyone.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah, we do get a lot more sort of broader people doing it.
Wow, those camera manufacturers have really sorted that out. Wow.
Yeah, I think they're sat in rather nice offices at the moment. They've probably got pool tables, actually.
So what camera do you use?
I use the 20D.
So you're a Canon guy.
Yeah, I bought my girlfriend a D70 for Christmas, so I'm trying to keep it on an even keel, I guess. But I don't know if that was a good idea or a bad idea. Well, I guess I get to keep all my lenses.
Right, now you can't share lenses.
Yeah. So yeah, I am a Canon guy. I don't know. At the time when I was buying it, I was really wanting to do a lot of sort of fast-paced photography, and that was the only option, whereas now we've got the D200 at a sort of quite sensible price as well. So, yeah, I need something a bit durable as well. I'm quite clumsy. So.
Oh, I have the 20D, and I really like it.
Yeah,
I'd rather have the 5D, though.
I think 20D's actually our most popular camera out of all of them, to be perfectly honest.
Really? Even more popular than the 300D or the 350D?
I think 350D's maybe sort of... The problem with the 20D in the shop that I work in is that half the staff have them. And when people are trying to decide between the two, I guess sometimes we sound very enthusiastic about the 20D.
You nudge people in the right direction. You probably get a bigger commission from Canon, don't you?
Well, we don't really earn commissions, so we're not supposed to be biased. I guess the enthusiasm just comes out that a lot of people that are sort of looking at between the two are really looking at to buy the 20D.
Right.
And they just wondering whether they really need the features, and I guess the key thing a lot of the time is build quality rather than anything else. They're both completely capable of doing astounding work.
Right, we'll have to be fair to Nikon. They also built astounding cameras, great lenses, and
oh yeah, absolutely. It's
and Olympus and all the others as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
just don't let's not get too biased. Even though I do love the 20D, I really do. So
yeah.
Other than that, other than selling photo equipment, what do you do in terms of photography? You are a photographer as well.
Yeah. Well, in terms of the shop, we do a lot of cross processing, not for customers but for staff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's really sort of, it's a good fun thing to do. It's a bit unpredictable and you get some sort of nice colour results out of it. I quite like the sort of over-the-top looks you might have seen.
Well, let's explain cross-processing first for, I guess we have many digital photographers listening here that don't know what that is.
Well, basically, cross-processing is using a slide film that would normally be developed in E6, like a chemistry set called E6, in the conventional chemistry that was used for negative film, C41.
That's so you're actually using the wrong chemicals to develop the film?
Yeah, yeah. You're basically doing what the instructions say not to do. You can do it the other way around as well, but that's a bit rarer. The main effect from cross-processing slide film in C41 chemistry, you know, the negative chemistry, is that you get really, really punchy contrast. It's really, really crisp, but you also get quite grainy pictures.
grainy pictures and difference in the color rendition, right?
Yeah. Sometimes, I mean, it's actually quite sort of film dependent. You can get really, really sort of mad, bizarre shifts of color. You know, skin tones can be green from all your. Yeah, they're just you can get some really quite mad results, and you basically just need to find a film that you like the look of cross-processed, and then you can sort of play about with it. You can get some really quite sort of dramatic effects.
Is there an easy way to reproduce that effect in the digital world?
Yeah, if you've got Photoshop or something similar and you can do some curves editing, then you can really sort of play around and try and get that sort of cross-processed look. The main thing is that you're sort of really building up a sort of steep contrast curve, so you've got quite a heavy sort of S shape in your curves. And then to get your mad colours, your bizarre colour changes, you can actually go into your curves menu, your channels, and do separate curves for each channel. If you play about, you can get some really, really sort of nice looks. You'll get the grain as well, because you're bumping your contrast and changing stuff so much that you're going to get some like noisy, grainy pictures, which is something that it makes it look quite realistic. It's a definite acquired taste, though. I could very much understand why people wouldn't like it. But yeah, it's perfectly possible on digital. In fact, I guess it's a bit easier, and you're not potentially ruining a whole film's worth of shots.
and for on the film side, it's probably also the surprise factor that comes in here.
Yeah, I think there's some sort of magic involved with sort of, you know, you put the film in one end and you wait your 12 minutes or however long it takes, and out the other end you've got your slides that are all funny colours, and you sort of, if you've never done that particular film before, you've got no idea what's going to happen. It's like putting stuff in a magic box and it just turns out at the other end. So yeah.
So working in this type of a job, do you get like huge discounts to buy equipment?
Equipment, there's actually not as much money as people seem to think in it. In terms of printing, though, printing's really sort of where I get my sort of, that's what does it for me to keep me sort of happy in the job. It's just unreal to go in and, you know, my home printer, if you like, is a Fujifilm Lab. It's unreal, because I can go in and I can color correct my prints and make sure they'll be exact and not have to pay extortionate amounts for professional printing, because I can do it myself. So yeah, that's the real perk is in the printing. I've done a lot of enlargements since I started. I got a house full of them now.
I send my photo stuff off to an online lab, and I've done a lot of research with various labs to find the right one that does the job as I wanted. And one thing I always wondered about, maybe you can shed some light on that, how often are those digital printing machines calibrated, color calibrated?
Well, we color calibrate our machine every paper change. So if we print someone's order that's 6x4s, 7x5s, and 9x6s, we can print two sizes at a time, then we would calibrate every paper change
really?
Make sure that it's correct. The difference in colour, however, can sort of arise from different chemical batches. It's very difficult to get an exact consistency of print. And the other thing is that unless you really know the lab, there's actually colour correction work going on sort of inside the printer that you're just not really told about. You really need to turn it off to get the best out of the printing gear, but in that case you kind of need to be there to make sure that the prints are coming out okay.
I see. So with the, let's say, with the regular holiday snaps, someone brings in digital holiday snaps or family mm-hmm. snaps or party snaps or whatever, I assume they are usually run through some automatic color correction, sharpening, whatever algorithms.
Extent, yeah, for digital it's less so, because the people that, you know, that see these prints are already, they already expect to have something back. They've already seen the results, so they're not corrected quite so much.
And the cameras do a pretty big level of in-camera sharpening and correction already, right?
Yeah, well, the labs perform a bit of sharpening as well. The labs are actually really good at it, depending on the sort of settings that the labs set up to. They're so simple to use, to the sort of whole process is very, very simple, and it can give some really good results as well. But yeah, it's your average sort of holiday snaps are sort of color corrected, sharpened, they're all done in the lab. It's really web use where sharpening really, really is sort of important if you want a really good quality image, as you've covered in your show a few times, in fact.
The whole sharpening thing is, I think, one of the most important. And one of the reasons I chose the lab that I sent my things to is that I can tell them, do not sharpen, do not color correct. Take them as I send them to you, and the results are usually pretty close, if not exactly spot on.
Oh, that's good. One of the things that happened to me when I was first starting photography was that I used one of these postal services. I bracketed quite a high dynamic range. It was film prints in those days. It was a good few years ago. And I bracketed a whole pile, and they came back and they'd been hand assessed by the printers, and they'd evened out the exposure, and I got back about 9 or 10 prints exactly the same but from different negatives.
Oh, really?
With varying levels of grain, yeah. So I learnt my lesson the long way. I had to send them back and get them printed again without the hand assessed. I just wanted to know what they looked like, you know, deliberately too dark or too light.
Yeah, but I can assume that even if I send it in through an online service, that all those batches will be at least looked at by a person, right?
Yeah, well, they should be, really. If it's a sort of decent lab, then yeah, they'll have had, you know, some degree of human contact. You shouldn't ever get back sort of substandard prints, unless you send them substandard pictures. It's yeah, there is sort of a lot of quality control that goes on behind the scenes. It's really sort of quite amazing to see the sort of levels of care that are actually taken in printing, even on a sort of commercial level, a non-professional printing level. Okay. It's there's a lot that goes into it. The lab staff work quite hard,
which is good to know. I mean it's a bit like sending this thing off into some sort of a black box and getting something back, and you really don't know what happens to your pictures. And I think especially if you are in the really into it and into post-processing, and you have a digital SLR and you want this the highest possible quality, it's a reassuring thing to know that those things are actually handled by actual people.
And that was it for today's Tips from the Top Floor. Thanks for tuning in. I'll bring you part two of that interview on Monday instead of a Photoshop corner. There's a few reasons to that. First of all, Wednesday is already kind of planned out with the 100th show. Well, not really planned out, but I really don't know what's going to happen there. Friday is another interview already, so I don't have time to play the interview any other place than on Monday, unless you are ready to wait for 2 weeks. So my apologies for not bringing you a Photoshop Corner next Monday, but the rest of this interview and the new Photoshop Corner will then be up in a week. Oh my god, that was complicated. I'm not sure if I understand it myself. Anyway, we'll see what happens on Monday. Thanks again for tuning in. Please make sure you take the listener survey. That's really one of the biggest things you can do for me right now, apart from voting on Podcast Alley, of course. Send me show 100 gratings either as an MP3 to info@tipsfromthetopfloor.com or send me a voicemail at 206-202-3757. That's 206-202-DSLR. Have a blast on the weekend. Cheers and happy shooting. You want it right, I won't give up the fight. I stay with you every night. I make you understand that I'm still your man. I remember that I told you there'd be sunshine after rain.